management. In terms of the number of our number as the portfolio committee, we courage, and therefore we can start. But I will give some time to the acting secretary to give us any apologies or any other thing, housekeeping that we might need. I've also acknowledged your presence as the co-managers of this particular important committee. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to members and our colleagues from Auditor General. I have an apology from Deputy Minister. She's presenting a white paper on rights of people with disabilities to the KZN Executive Committee, which will be followed by meetings with the MEC of Social Development, and that is happening today. And I have an extending apology from Honorable de Kock. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think it's clear, this, but I will request members to accept the apologies as a procedure. Honorable Mawusin is supporting. So can I get a second? The whip. Thank you very much. So their apologies are accepted. It's time now that we proceed and we get into our business. While I didn't keep your name in mind, it's important that when you make your input, you will also introduce your delegation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Lovens van Vieren. I'm the business executive responsible for, amongst others, the social development portfolio. To my left is Mr. Kiben Govender. He is involved in the auditing of the Department of Social Development. And to my right is Ms. Michelle Magelman. She is involved in the auditing of the NDA. The purpose of our engagement today with the committee is to brief the committee on the audit outcomes of the social development portfolio for the 15-16 financial year, to enable the committee to use the information to exercise effective oversight over this portfolio, and this is also aligned to our reputation promise as the Auditor General. In the slides show presentation, there's slides from page 4 until page 7. Those slides just basically deals with the various audit opinions that that the Auditor General can express. And I'm not going to go through it in detail, but just to highlight again that government is striving for is what we call clean audits. That basically means that there are the entities got no issues with regard to the financial statements. In other words, an unqualified audit opinion on the financial statements. That there are no significant findings on compliance with laws and regulations, and that there are no findings on performance information. So you will see in the rest of the slide presentation, we will focus on those three areas. I would then like to go to slide number 8, on page 8. This slide, on the left-hand side of the slide, it gives us an overview of the three-year audit outcomes, and you will see that it is currently a stagnation in the audit outcomes. 71% of the audits are unqualified with findings, and 29%, which is SASSA and NDA, is unqualified financially. However, there are findings on compliance with legislation. I also need to highlight that the four funds that that falls under the control of the department. These funds are not subject to the PFMA, and therefore they don't have to prepare performance information. So when we deal with the performance information, just keep in mind that for the purpose of the funds, the basic focus is on the financial statements itself. If we look at the middle block then, which deals with the compliance with laws and regulations, there were no significant findings for the Department of Science and Technology, for the Department of Social Development. However, there were findings with regard to SASSA and the NDA. In the case of SASSA, it mainly relates to supply chain management, policies and procedures and legal requirements that have not been always complied with, which then ultimately also results into irregular expenditure. For the NDA, it basically relates to the following, that the strategic plan was not submitted to the department as required by the legislation. There were also non-compliance with supply chain management legislation and regulations, which then also resulted in irregular expenditure. And there was material adjustments that had to be made to the financial statements. It's a requirement of the PFMA that when an entity submits its financial statements, that at that point in time the financial statements are accurate and complete, and that there would be no need for any adjustments to be made during the audit process. However, we do allow these adjustments to be made during the audit process, provided that an entity can make these adjustments within a reasonable time for us to be able to meet the legislative deadlines. So in the case of the NDA, you will see it is an unqualified audit opinion because they were able to make those adjustments within the allowed timelines. However, it is not in compliance with the requirements of the PFMA. The right block deals with performance information, and we focus mainly on two areas, the quality of the performance plans and the quality of the performance submitted information, the information that you actually then see in the annual report. And you will see that here it has been green for all 3 years for all the entities. However, in the case of the NDA, they also had to make some adjustments to the performance information to avoid any negative findings in the audit report. So what you find in the annual report, we are satisfied that it's fairly presented and that the information in there is reliable. But they had to make adjustments to get to that point. And therefore, just some focus they needed in terms of the review processes to make sure that information is accurate on a quarterly basis, and then once it's included in the annual performance report in the annual report, to make sure that it's accurate and complete, because this is a risk indicator that if it's not well controlled, it can result in a situation where the entity might not be able to actually make those adjustments in time. The next slide deals with the status of key control and assurance providers. I would just basically like to focus on the NDA. You will note that for the NDA there are some red blocks, and I would like to just briefly take you through those red blocks. The first one for the NDA deals with effective human resource management. This is there because there were vacancies in the position of CFO and CEO. These are key positions, which should be filled as soon as possible, and which should ideally not be vacant for a long period of time. The other red block deals with review and monitor compliance, and that basically focuses on the non-compliance with the legislation that I've highlighted for you, the strategic plan not submitted in time, and the non-compliance with supply chain management and the material adjustments which had to be made to the financial statements. Under governance, you will note that there are two red blocks there. The first one is risk management. The reason why it's there is because the NDA did not have an approved risk management strategy and a fraud prevention plan. Those are two specific requirements also of the Treasury regulations. It is, however, also key controls that should be in place for any entity. And the last block at the bottom deals with the audit committee, and that is because there were no audit committee in place for the year under review. An audit committee is a key governance structure that should be there and which plays a very important role in, first of all, controlling and directing internal audit, but also it exercises oversight. So if you look at the right-hand side of the slide, you will see there, when we look about assurance providers, you will see that at the audit committee for the NDA, it is a purple which says not established. So it's very important that these governance structures are being in place. So if you look at the assurance providers per level, you will see that we've indicated on the top block yellow for SASSA and NDA. And that is because of the findings that I've discussed with you with regard to supply chain management and compliance and material adjustments that had to be made. So senior management needs to improve on its review process just to ensure that the necessary assurance is provided, that once the financial statements or performance information is submitted for audit, it's accurate and complete, and to have preventative and detective controls in place to make sure that there is compliance with the relevant laws and regulations. For the internal audit unit, there is an internal audit unit for the NDA. You'll see it's noted in yellow there. However, because there was no audit committee, to actually exercise oversight over the internal audit function, and therefore that also needs to be addressed from an assurance point of view, because the audit committee actually reviews the reports of the internal audit. We've also assessed the assurance provided by this portfolio committee, and you've seen that we've highlighted the criteria there which we've looked at during the assessment, and in our assessment, we believe that the portfolio committee is providing the necessary assurance to this portfolio. If we then move on to slide 11, slide 11 gives us a summary of the areas that we focused on when we audited the performance information. We actually indicate also the various programs that we focused on during our audit. And then on the right-hand side, our conclusions on the usefulness and reliability of the information. You will note that it is green for all the programs and for all the entities that we've audited. Just to note again that in the case of the NDA for program one, management did have to correct some material misstatements to enable them to achieve a result where there were no significant audit findings. Slide 13 deals with in a bit more detail with compliance with laws and regulations. On the left-hand side and on the right-hand side, it deals with the quality of submitted financial statements. You will note that in the heading we say slight improvement in compliance with legislation. However, if you look at the detail, you will see that there are some green arrows going up and some red arrows going down. So there are some improvements and there are some regressions, but at the net, we concluded that there's a slight improvement. The key areas that we would like to highlight is material misstatements in submitted financial statements, and you will see that actually for the previous year it was SASSA. They then managed to address it, and for this year then it is the NDA that had to make material adjustments to the financial statements to avoid an audit qualification. The next focus area is prevention of unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and you will see that there is a regression. For this year, there were findings in those areas on SASSA and the NDA. The management of procurement and other contracts is the third area. And there's an improvement that for this year it's only the NDA that has got specific findings in that area. And then the last area, submission of strategic plans, that is the finding that I have discussed where the NDA did not submit its strategic plan in time to the Department of Social Development. On the right-hand side, the slide gives us an indication of what the situation would have been had there not been a opportunity for entities to make corrections to the financial statements. So if you look at the left-hand side for 15-16, that red there, it is the NDA, which I've discussed earlier on to say that the NDA did have to make material adjustments to their financial statements to avoid an audit qualification. So if there was not a process for them to make adjustments, and if they were not successful in making these adjustments in time, they would have ended up with a qualification. And therefore, all the entities could end up with unqualified audit reports on the financial statements. Slide 14 deals a bit more with irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and we've given you the definitions on the left-hand side. What I would like to highlight is if we look at irregular expenditure, you will see that there is an increase in the irregular expenditure. Basically from a total of 60 million in the previous year to just over a billion rand in the current year. The majority of the irregular expenditure is in SASSA, and it is discussed in detail in the report of the CEO on page 14 and 15 of the annual report. If you want to see more detail about the irregular expenditure, you can refer to page 14 and 15 in the annual report of SASSA. And also in the financial statements of SASSA, there's a disclosure note on it. On page 104, and it is note 31. Page 104, note 31. There you will get the detail of the irregular expenditure in SASSA. In the NDA, there was also irregular expenditure of 14 million rands due to non-compliance with procurement processes, and 4 million rands for not following competitive bidding processes. And that you can find the detail of that in note 30 on page 95 of the annual report of the NDA. For the Department of Social Development, there was 8 million rands of irregular expenditure due to not following competitive bidding processes, and that is disclosed in note 25 to the annual report of the the Department of Social Development on page 199 of the annual report of the Department of Social Development. On the right-hand side, we provide a bit more information on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. On the top right hand, that expenditure is also disclosed in more detail in notes to the financial statements of all three of the entities. The next slide just gives an indication on whether entities actually do investigations into irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, because it's a requirement of the PFMA that all irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure should be investigated. And we are saying that all three entities currently do have processes in place to investigate irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Just bear in mind again that because the relief funds are not subject to the PFMA, this requirement is not relevant to them, and therefore we only focus on three entities here. Slide 17 deals with the top two root causes for the findings that we've discussed so far in the presentation, and we summarized it into two root causes. The first one is a slow response by management, and it basically relates to SASA and the NDA for the findings as we've discussed. And the second one is a lack of consequence for poor performance and transgressions. It is very important that whenever there's irregular expenditure or fruitless and wasteful expenditure or non-compliance with procurement processes, that consequence management should also take place to help officials accountable, but also to make sure that there's not a reoccurrence. Also very important for the accounting officers of SASA and the NDA to take the necessary steps to make sure that there's preventative controls in place and to ensure that there's in future compliance with the supply chain management regulations. And in the case of the NDA, more focus on reviewing financial statements to make sure that the financial statements that are ultimately submitted is accurate and complete, and more focus on the performance information to make sure that it's also accurate and complete when it's submitted. And then to make sure that the strategic plan is actually submitted within the legislative required deadlines. In the middle block, we give an overview of the status of the commitments made by the minister, and you will see that the first commitment is regarded as implemented, and the second one is indicated as in progress, and that is basically also because it is something which is on an ongoing basis. So that commitment is the one which basically deals with the. For the minister to monitor the implementation of the action plans to ensure that SASA and the NDA also achieve clean audits. On the right-hand side, we have two proposed commitments for the portfolio committee. And the proposed commitments that we have there is for the committee to monitor and the implementation of the new action plans for SASA and the NDA to make sure that they also achieve clean audit. So they should ideally prepare now audit action plans. What are they going to do to address these audit findings and to make sure that it's not a reoccurrence? They should implement those action plans with time frames, and we are recommending that the portfolio committee should on a regular basis inquire from from these entities on the action plan, does it exist, and actually the successful implementation of these action plans to address the areas identified. And then there are critical vacancies that needs to be filled, CEO and CFO of the NDA, and then subsequent to year end, the CEO position of SASSA also became vacant. Those are key leadership positions that need to be filled, and we recommend that the portfolio committee also just monitor the filling of those positions to ensure that they are filled as soon as possible. Honourable Chairperson, that is the presentation. I would gladly address any questions. Thank you very much.
We welcome the report. Thank you very much. And can I request the committee to just put their hands together before asking questions? Thank you very much. I understand now the platform is for members to ask questions, any question, whether it's comment, clarity, whatever. Thank you very much. The platform is yours on the floor. Honorable Bell, Mama Wilson.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, AG's department, for the presentation. It's very excellent. I just want to make a few comments and say that the department definitely needs to take some remedial action on the outcome of the Auditor General. And then I'd also like to know the consequence management that must take place. What is that? Because I think in previous years it has been mentioned, and if that has been picked up and followed up. Also, it is mentioned that they need to find creative ways of creating an environment where the law and financial regulation should be followed. So we're hoping that the department will adhere to that. Regarding the irregular and fruitless wasteful expenditure, the regression is also noted, and we're also hoping that and looking forward that the improvements will improve in the following financial year, that we have clean audits. I've noted that the non-compliance with procurement process requirements, the legislation, contracts, I think definitely the department needs to check up, and even if there's any training that needs to take place, but that needs to improve, that is not acceptable. Better planning perhaps needs to be done by the department, and I agree that the CEO and CFO positions is critical in making sure that things flow from the top to the bottom, bottom to the top. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Van Vuren, and your team. There's a couple of alarming things. It's always great to see that you know that in principle we have clean audits, but clean audits to me mean nothing. It just means simply that you could trace the money. It doesn't mean that the budget things were good or bad. It just means that we've been able to trace the money. My first concern is the fact that the NDA has no audit committee. I find that astronomically mind-blowingly disturbing, because if you don't have an audit committee, there is absolutely no monitoring whatsoever of procurement processes, of tender processes, of finances. And I think we desperately need to know exactly when that audit committee is going to be put in place, because that is most disturbing, and perhaps how long they've been without an audit committee. The downward trend on irregular expenditure on NDA and SASA is disturbing. And it just goes to show what happens in the instance of the NDA when you don't have an audit committee in place. Everything starts to fall apart, and people are in a position to do willy-nilly what they feel like as far as financial concerns are. And that generally will lead to legal implications later on that are concerning. your comments about non-compliance of regulations with regards to submissions in terms of the PFMA and those kind of things, again, alarming. And I believe that if we possibly had an audit committee, in a qualified audit committee there, this could have been addressed. I do find that an explosion of a regular expenditure from 60 million to 1 billion, mind-blowing. We are talking about public funds here. And that is absolutely mind-blowing, and we really need to know what has been put in place to avoid this, because that's big news. We are dealing in a portfolio that cares for the poor and the vulnerable, who helps them to survive, and we've got a billion rand in irregular expenditure, a lot of which is obviously on procurement. And that raises huge red flags. And I'm glad that you've talked about the audit action plans with timeframes with SASA. And again, concerning, we've discussed vacancy rates in these departments for a long time, and the fact that there's a CEO and a CFO, the most senior positions in the department standing vacant, means that nobody is really accountable for what is going on there. How long have those positions been vacant? And when can we get feedback on this one? I thank you.
No, thanks, Honourable Chairperson. I think I also welcome the presentation from the AG's office. I think my departure point, first and foremost, would be on the clean audits. For me, clean audits, in fact, is a fundamental development, because the adverse effect of not having clean audits is a qualified report and a disclaimer. So I will not be comfortable with downgrading the whole question of clean audits. That's what government is all about, is good governance. That's what we want. So in the event that we can't criticize clean audits, we must not underplay that or underscore that. So for me, the clean audits by the entities as reported by the AG is fundamental, is substantive, is material. And I think that should be sustained. That is what we call upon the department. But my question would be in terms of the internal controls. Your AG's office is highlighting the critical issues that are responsible for that. What is the management report around that decision around internal audit, so that we must be able to see it from an oversight point of view, are we going to follow up? Are they, addressing the weaknesses of internal audits? Because I think the department, if it is not properly capacitated, that must be that. Is it either irresponsibility or poor planning, or what is it? The question of the internal controls that are deficient. But I also want to comment on the commitments made. I think Mr. Van Vieren from the AG's office, you are reporting that the commitment by the minister in case one has been implemented and others are in progress. Now, the last one that I want to comment on is a question around the material statements, material adjustment or statement. Because you are indicating if there was no interaction by management, they could have been qualified. What I'm interested in, what is the management report? What are they saying? Are the reasons why there's material adjustments to the financial statements? But overall, I conclude by saying that the audit finding, especially around the action plan in terms of the audit finding, the time frame given, is the department saying that they will be able to follow up and carry through all the action plan as identified? And lastly, I think the the recommendations around the filling of critical vacant posts? Are there commitments in terms of specific timeframes? Thanks, Mr. Fakiran. Thanks, Honorable Chair. But I think we must compliment the department for the clean audits. It can't be downgraded.
Maybe I wish I would allow the AG to make responses and then take second hand, so that those questions that we asked, people are still able to get an answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. When it comes to consequence management, it's a requirement of the PFMA. There's actually four requirements of the PFMA when it comes to compliance with legislation and the prevention of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The PFMA, first of all, determines that an entity should prevent unauthorized, irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Then the PFMA says that an entity should detect, so they should self-detect irregular, fruitless and unauthorized expenditure. Then the requirement is that once you've detected it, you must disclose it in your financial statements. And the fourth requirement is that you should investigate these cases and that you should take appropriate action. So therefore, it's very important that each and every case should be investigated to the merits of the case. It is not to say that in each and every case of irregular expenditure that there was not necessarily value for money obtained, but that will be ultimately determined through the investigation that should be executed, whether value for money was obtained. And therefore, for the current irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure that's disclosed in the various financial statements, it's important that those investigations take place and that the appropriate consequence management then follows. But consequence management also just goes a bit further, because consequence management can also relate to your execution of day-to-day key controls. So if you are responsible to ensure that a certain section of the financial statements or performance information is accurate and complete, and you do not execute that control the way it should be executed, then there should also be consequence management processes for you as an individual in terms of performance management, you know, to ensure that you actually execute those controls on a day-to-day basis. I think I'll ask Michelle. There's two questions which I will ask Michelle just to respond to at the end. The one is for how long was there no audit committee in place? And the other one, the date is from the 16th of... Oh, they were only appointed in March 2016. So basically at year end, you know, when there wasn't a effective committee in place for the year under review to execute that key governance function as the Honourable Member has referred to. The other question that I will ask Michelle just to respond to is on what is the key reasons why material adjustments had to be made to the financial statements. But for the vacancies, if you look at the detailed briefing notes, on page 10 of the detailed briefing notes, we've given for you a table there termed instability in key positions, and there we actually given you a bit more detail on the vacancies, where the vacancies actually were, and for how long those vacancies were. Remember, this takes us until end of March 2016. So it's possible that since March 2016 up until now, at some of the entities, there could have been movement in the appointment of some of these positions. But the key ones are CEO positions and CFO positions. Those are strategic leadership positions. They set the tone at the top. Very key positions. Very important that they do not stay vacant for too long, yeah. Internal controls. I think let's just quickly go back to slide 9. Thank you very much. Yeah. So I think the key focus should be on the NDA, where we've highlighted a number of issues in red. The first one, which deals with HR management, is about the vacancies. Also important to remember that supply chain management also falls within the domain of the CFO, and therefore a CFO position is such a key position. When there's non-compliance with supply chain management, that leads to irregular expenditure. And then the other key area is compliance with laws and regulations, and it basically relates to the submission of the strategic plan, which wasn't done in time. That is something which should be able to be fixed relatively easy. Again, very important, you need a CEO to drive the process and to give leadership and to take accountability. And then the last two blocks, which deals with risk management and the audit committee. So there's also a link between them, because as the honourable member has indicated, that the audit committee fulfills a key role, and it fulfills a key role in risk management. So an audit committee, typically what will be on the audit committee's program will be the risk assessment of the entity. And then the audit committee will make sure that there's a link between the risk assessment and the risk response by internal audit. So internal audit should typically focus then on the high risk items. And then the audit committee will then monitor the internal audit plan to make sure that it gets executed in time. And the audit committee will then look at the audit findings from internal audit during the year. And the audit committee will then ensure that management puts the necessary actions in place throughout the year. So once the link between risk, internal audit, and the audit committee is key. If they function very well, then you would have a very good control environment, because then management will timelessly know where there are internal controls which are not functioning. Internal audit would make recommendations. Audit committee would exercise oversight. Management will implement the action plans, and all of this will happen in year. And then you will not have a situation where it's once external audit comes and do the external audit, that only then they pick up on the issues and the weaknesses in the internal controls. I think the last item that I think that covers the key items that that I needed to respond to. I'll just ask Michelle to just quickly give you some feedback on the material adjustments in the financial statements of the NDA.
For NDA, the material adjustments were the result of schedules that supported the financial statements were not complete. For the accruals, we just found that in the accruals listing, some of the amounts that were there were debit balances, which cannot be an amount that you owe. So we had to then adjust the schedules that support. Even for irregular expenditure, what they submitted as part of the schedules that support what's been disclosed in the financial statements did not agree. So we had to make those adjustments during the audit.
So Chairperson, it basically comes down to review processes. And then again, if there's a vacancy in CFO, a CFO would typically focus a lot on those final review processes to make sure that the financial statements are accurate and complete.
Chair, can I just make a follow-up elucidation given by Michelle? I was I'm comfortable with the response that you've given, but I'm interested, or I'm inquisitive, to know what is the management report. What are they saying now in terms of this? I understand the context, but the attribute, what is that? So that when they come here now, that is the clarity we seek from them. Then we've got a balanced response from what the AG's office is saying in their response. Because obviously, as an oversight board, that is the kind of question that you want to know, so that it doesn't recur. the next one. So, just that one, so through the Honorable Chairperson.
I think Lawrence already covered the fact that because there was no CFO, it puts a lot of strain now on the financial manager and his team because there's no review process. But in terms of their responses, they've acknowledged the finding, they've got their action plan. So the schedules that will be prepared in future should be then be reviewed before it's submitted for audit.
Very much for the answers, Honorable Hope and Mama Masango, and then Mama Wilson. Thank you. Thanks, Chairperson. I'm just looking at the four dormant accounts. Because it's always within the AG's report, the opinions is the same. I think, Madam Chair, when the department comes in, and I would like to know from the AG, do you ever make recommendations on this for dormant accounts to the department? I think you should answer that one. Then when the department comes, there were recommendations, I think, since we listened to the audit report, that a repeal of legislation should be done here, and that we should ask the department, because I think that's going to be important, because we can't sit with something that came through the legacy report. Of the department, when we took over here, you know, the Social Development Portfolio Committee, and this is still here, because it will remain here till the end of our term. So I think that we'll have to, the Auditor General have to tell us recommendation you made, and we have to ask the department on that. Are they going to repeal any laws on it? Then when it comes to irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, when you look at the audit report, you know, when it comes to SASA, it's in the 14th, 15th year and the 15th, 16th year. So I think we have to ask SASA about that. It's a warrant factor. Because you can't have irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and no effective steps are being taken. I don't think you should answer that question, just giving the guidelines for our next meeting. Then the other is you spoke about consequence management. And I think when it comes to the report of the department, I won't speak much there, because there's unauthorized, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. And there are reasons given by the department. And if you look at the AG's report, they do give reasons, because they speak about car damages, traffic fines, training, and misuse of state vehicles. Those are some of the things they are saying. So I think when it comes to the department, when they come to us, we must know if these matters are being investigated. And you speak about consequence management, but we have to ask about what due processes will be followed, because we can't charge as a portfolio committee. We can just make a recommendation on due processes. So I think that will have to go to the department. I'm just giving guidelines as we go along that we could ask the department about when they come to us. but what the Auditor General can do, answer what you can. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I make note of the fact that the next meeting for the FC will start in 6 minutes' time because they still have another committee to attend to. So without putting undue pressure, Mama Masango, please be focused to certain points as well as my friend to allow us a minute for the AG to respond to your question. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Mine goes to the compliance with registration section of the report, where both in SASSA and the NDA, for example, in SASSA, there's expenditure management where it is it says the effective steps were not taken to prevent irregular expenditure. And then in the NDA, under strategic planning and performance, expenditure management and procurement and contract management, the root causes, or the one sort of cross-cutting root cause for all that is that the accounting authority did not exercise sufficient review. And my comment stroke question there is that we're in a situation where we know that the key positions are not filled, and the accounting authority knows this. But in all these key aspects of the report, there was no sufficient oversight being applied, because I think it's some time ago at the National Development Agency, when a situation like this happened, and it's a very long time ago, the department actually sent people, an envoy from the department, to actually make sure that there is a budget that comes in, and that budget must be managed. So in a situation where you have no strategic plan being submitted, you have no key positions filled, but the money is being, the budget is being used, and the accounting authority does not exercise sufficient oversight. I just, for me, that's quite, amazing.
Thank you, Chair. Mine's short and sweet. Just in review of pages 8, 9, and 13, in comparison to last year's report by the AG, they're actually very similar. And I find this alarming because it means that despite recommendations in the last annual report, we are seeing the same recommendations in this annual report, which means there has been no improvement, and I find that alarming. Thank you.
I allow the AG to respond, but I'm also happy that it was made clear by some members that some questions belong to the department, and I do understand that most of our questions, we have been made to aware what questions to ask from those who are the actual implementers. So AG will support us towards that area.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. I think the only one that I have to respond to is on the funds, actually. Yes, we have made a recommendation in the past with regard to the funds to say that there's these funds, they are dormant, they are cash in most of these funds. These funds are controlled by legislation. And that we believe that if there's no longer a need for those funds, that the relative legal and legislative processes should be followed to dissolve these funds and then to deal with the cash in these funds in an appropriate manner as directed by the legislation, and if there's legislative changes that are required to do that, that the process be initiated to do that. So we have made a recommendation like that in the past. I think maybe just a last point on the oversight. I think the Chairperson, the Honourable Member that talked about the oversight, it is a very fair assessment. And so a national department can render assistance, but the In terms of the PFMA, the accountability either lies with whether it's an accounting authority or whether it's an accounting officer. Now, in the case of NDA, and Michelle must just help me out here, if I remember correctly, in the case of the NDA, the board itself also were not constituted for most of the time during the financial year. So that's now your challenge. There should be the PFMA says that the board is the accounting authority, mm-hmm. and the ultimate authority then rest and the accountability rest by the board. So if it starts off by no board, no CEO, no CFO, no audit committee, mm-hmm. then it speaks to the results. And therefore, one need to address it at the various levels that we, from right from accounting, establishing a board, establishing boards in time, and then because the boards will then appoint the CEO, and the CEO will appoint the CFO, you know, so that is a very important observation. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Is there something that we should have Michelle wants to say? Thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity to thank the AG's office and also that we have had an indirection on briefing, and most of the issues that you raised today are the issues that we had raised with the AG, and we are very happy that we have this consistency and a good working relationship. But I do want to make a commitment to say this committee is very committed to actually oversight the committee, I mean the department, and also ensure that it complies. But as long as we get such reports, we are impressed because these are the things that we hammer all the time. But I do know that the portfolio committee had got powers what to do when they are not being listened to. That time will come, and I know members will practice what is within themselves. So thank you very much. We will allow you to go and also allow space for the next presentation. Thank you so much.
I think we will be quite
We can start now. We are, most members are back from the 1 minute break or 2 minute break. If they are well, I must welcome the Fiscal Financial Commission in our portfolio committee today. And you arrived when we are already starting with the first meeting, and therefore we didn't have time to welcome you and to allow you to introduce your delegation. I therefore want you to feel comfortable, and you are coming to us for the first time, and we are excited about that, and we believe we will find a long time working relationship in ensuring that we account to South Africans at all costs. It has been a gap, I must say, that when we work with the Auditor General, we find that people have complied with the existing laws, but it doesn't really tell us what the impact. So now we are very balanced. Because if we say we spent R100 on this bottle, then someone wants to know what impact did it have on the people that it was meant to improve that their lives. So we are very welcome in our midst. We are going to give you an opportunity to address us and also to introduce your delegation to us. And we will be having an opportunity also to ask questions so that we are able to work on our oversight task properly and understanding what the state of affairs is in departments through your eyes. Thank you very much. With that, I bring to you, honorable members, the Fiscal Financial Commission to address us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning to Honorable colleagues. We are extremely happy to come and share some thoughts and briefings with your portfolio committee today, and thank you for extending the invitation. My name is Ramos Mabugu. I'm the designated head of the delegation from the Financial and Fiscal Commission today. Sitting behind me is Mr. Henry Exton. He is our parliamentary liaison officer working from our Cape Town office. On my extreme right is Mrs. Sasha Peters, who is a program manager for our National Budget Analysis Unit. She does sit in our Cape Town office. Next to Sasha is Mr. Halib Dawood, who is our program manager for Provincial Budget Analysis Unit and also sits in our Cape Town office. Next to me is Ms. Popintaka, who is a researcher in the National Budget Analysis Unit. And what's unique about Ms. Ntaka is she started as an intern with the Financial and Fiscal Commission, having graduated from Stellenbosch University and did extremely well that now she is part of the permanent staff. That's the team for today. We have tendered two apologies from commissioners that are outside of the country in advance.
Thank you very much. We welcome all your delegation. Then please address. Thank you.
Thank you. In terms of our presentation today, we are going to touch on five broad areas that we thought could be of use in the current work that the Portfolio Committee is focusing on, which we understood to be the BRRR reports. There are other streams of work that the Commission does, which I will talk to, and if the Portfolio Committee would find value in those pieces of work, can always call us to come back and talk a bit more around some of that work. Over the years, we have made many recommendations specifically for social development, Department of Social Development in particular, right from the years when a lot of the social development functions were sitting at provincial level to when they migrated to national, up to as recent as 2 years ago when we did a public hearing report on financing of child welfare services that we tabled with Parliament and was subsequently processed by the Portfolio Committee. And we have put at the end of this presentation some of the recommendations that are in stream that we thought you could use to interact with the department in terms of the progress they have made in putting those recommendations into action in their specific plans. So that brings me to the role and function of the Financial and Fiscal Commission. Essentially, we are a constitutional body, permanent, independent, statutory institution, and established in terms of Section 220 of the Constitution. And we have to function within the context of the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act. And in terms of our mandate, we make recommendations that are envisaged in Chapter 13 of the Constitution or in national legislation to Parliament.
A minute.
Sure.
The department has arrived, but can I request the department to delay their taking of seats in this session, because we are dealing with the Fiscal Financial Commission, but we're about to finish. In any way, we were supposed to start our meeting with you at 12. If either you quietly take your seats, but your meeting will start at 12. Those who want to buy chocolates and go to our restaurant inside here has a few minutes to do that. And those who still want to have a caucus amongst themselves, but those who want to pitch, if we can quickly do that so that we start. Please make one choice. Thank you very much. CFO of the department, if you want to sit, no worries. If you want to go, please speak. Okay. We've got no secrets, though. Sorry about that, and sorry so much. Please continue.
Thank you, Chair. So I was just explaining the mandate of the commission, and I just said, in terms of our main mandate, it's essentially to make recommendations to Parliament, provincial legislatures, and any other organ of state as determined by a national legislation. And the implication of that is if there is a burning issue for the portfolio committee that they want us to focus on, we report directly to Parliament, and that request can be made and will be processed in terms of the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act. Now, coming to the meat of the presentation, we'll start with some contextual issues. And here we have decided to pick on the core vulnerable groups, just to give the context that informs what we are going to say. Starting with women, with exception of women that fall within the 20 to 39 age group cohort, women are more likely to be functionally literate across all age groups when they are compared to their male peers, and that's from Statistics South Africa in 2015. So when focusing on women already, we see that a disadvantage in terms of a functional illiteracy coming through. In terms of unemployment rate, for women, it's 4.4% higher than national unemployment rate for men. And the one for men stood at 22.5%, which suggests that in terms of unemployment as a disability, the probability or likelihood of women being unemployed is higher than that 22.5%. When it comes to children, more than 40% of our children can be found in the two most populous provinces, KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng. And close on 18% of all our children in South Africa are orphaned, according to 2011 Statistics South Africa data. And the largest percentage of those orphans can be found again in KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape with 23.3%. The percentage for children aided households, which is another aspect of vulnerability, was approximately 0.4% in 2012, or 60,000 households. And the highest number of child-aided households could be found in Limpopo and the Eastern Cape. When it comes to people with disabilities, the prevalence nationally of a disability has increased between 2011 and 2016, from 7.5% in 2011 currently to 7.7% using recent Statistics South Africa figures. And that disability is prevalent at older ages, more prevalent again amongst women, where it stands at 8.9% or above a national average, when also compared to men. About 24% of disabled persons with severe disabilities have no formal schooling, and almost 25% have some primary education. There is low labor market absorption of persons with disability. And this can be gleaned from the proportion of not economically active persons, which is highest among the African population age group, and the highest proportion tends to be found again in KwaZulu-Natal and Eastern Cape of those not economically active. Now, to reiterate and come back to the National Development Plan, which Honorable Chair speaks to the outputs that you spoke about. Our guiding document there, the National Development Plan, calls for protection and advancement of the rights of women, children, and people with disabilities. And amongst the options that are proposed in the National Development Plan relevant for these vulnerable groups are that for women, access to labor market through secure tenure and public employment schemes. The Gender Commission and the department should set indicators and report annually on progress. It also calls for access to antiretrovirals by women 16 years and older. And it does this unreservedly and without any uncategoric statement. So it categorically states those three as key intervention areas for women. For children, the National Development Plan talks about improving quality of education and 2 years compulsory preschool education. It also calls on social protection and support for AIDS orphans. When it comes to people with disabilities, the National Development Plan calls for enhanced access to quality education and employment and their integration into all relevant planning activities. And therein for us also comes in one of the core challenges that we see, not just for the department we are going to appraise today, social development, but indeed for this portfolio committee, that a lot of the work will talk to coordination and integration, not just of the department itself, but with how it interacts with other departments. So we need to be thinking innovatively around how we bring it all together, because vulnerability has got all these facets that not only sit with one particular department, but other departments have an input into that process. Now, the third set of issues is budget analysis of the department, departmental analysis. And what we do here in terms of our methodology is we do backward casting and forward casting. We essentially do 7-year analysis of the budget and try to pick up important trends. Our belief is that out of a trend analysis, the portfolio committee can get an idea about whether things are working over time or whether we are regressing over time. So we look 3 years back and 3 years forward. And that first table is a condensed analysis of the budget analysis. And what it does, importantly, is for each of the programs of the Department compares a real average annual, growth for the last medium-term expenditure framework and the present medium-term expenditure framework 2016, so that you can glean by comparing the last two columns on the money actually flowing into the department, last MTEF compared to the present MTEF. And some main points that we can pick up from that analysis is the Department of Social Development's budget grows from about 137 billion in 2015-16 to about 149 billion in 2016-17. And that translates to about 2.02% increase. So when you compare 15-16 with 16-17, present financially, there's that 2.02% increase. The real growth in the budget is projected to remain around 2% over the rest of the 2016 medium-term expenditure framework period. Social assistance is our largest program on the budget, and it's projected to grow by a real average, a real annual average of 2.11% over the 2016 medium-term expenditure framework. And program four, which is welfare services policy development and implementation support, is projected to show high real average, real annual average growth over the 2016 medium-term expenditure framework period of 26.32%, which is a big outlier when you compare to the other programs. In fact, it's the main driver of the growth pay program. Now, digging deeper into program two, social assistance. Again, we do a long-term budget analysis to pick on trends and developments there. Looking at social assistance, the largest sub-programs within social assistance are your old age pension and child support. Grant in aid sub-program is projected to show a real annual average growth of 9.1% per annum relative to projected growth within other programs. This is quite significant level of growth. It's going outside of higher than the other sub-programs within the same social assistance. And over the 2016 medium-term expenditure framework period, the War Veteran sub-program is projected to show the biggest annual average decline, and is set to decline by 36.5% per annum. So that is a place to flag. What we next do is to understand spending by economic classification, because that's important in trying to trace what, in terms of economic classification, those transfers are buying. Now, in terms of our economic classification, we see that transfers and subsidies are the largest item. And this is due to transfers to provincial departments and the South African Social Security Agency. So that's what explains the transfers and subsidies dominating the economic classification characterization. Over the 2016 medium-term expenditure framework period, real annual average decline of 3.7% is projected for compensation of employees. And that is mainly a result of cabinet-approved budget reductions to lower the national aggregate expenditure ceiling. So that's what's explaining the projected decline that you are seeing in terms of compensation there is due to a cabinet decision to lower aggregate expenditure ceiling. And we do pick that up across all the national departments, so it's not unique to social development. Now, coming to the entities under Department of Social Development, that first table just describes the entity, the financial relationship, and nature of the operations at a very high level. But the key points that we want to make, and having listened to some of the discussion you had with the Auditor General, the first is departmental transfers to SASA, a Social Security Agency, is set to reach just under 8 billion by end of the 2016 medium-term expenditure framework. But we notice that transfers to SASA declined by a real annual average of 2% over the 2016 MTEF. There are challenges such as a lack of systems integration and management information capabilities, which impede the social pension system. And by 2018-19, SASA promises that it will work on a replacement for the social pension system. And in general, reading through the SASA-specific reports, its operations are said to become largely driven by information and communication technology over the medium term. So the focus over the medium term will be on implementing a range of projects aimed at modernizing service delivery. And what we think in terms of a discussion with the entity for the portfolio committee would be, given the context of the annual average decline of 2% over the medium-term expenditure framework, how do they foresee reprioritizations towards this new and bigger ICT-driven project? Because here we're comparing a decline of 2% over the medium-term expenditure framework in terms of the transfers that they're going to get, and then the big projects they are launching around modernization through ICT. So that would be an important discussion point. With the National Development Agency, their mandate review has been completed, and the agency will now shift its focus from grant making to capacity building of CSOs to ensure that the organizations are appropriately capacitated. And here, allocation is set to increase from 268 million to 283 million in 2016-17. And over the MTEF, the 2016 MTEF, transfers to this entity are projected to experience a real annual average decline of about 0.6% per annum. So again, there is going to be a lot of reprioritization within a marginally increasing allocation over the MTEF for the NDA, National Development Agency. Now, bringing the finances together with a performance for the department and the entities is what we do in the fifth part of the presentation. Now, looking at spending performance for the department as a whole, well, the good news is the department spent close to 99% of its total budget in 2015-16, which is almost like trying to reprimand your own child when they get 99% in a math test. It's a good spending performance, and you will argue that why did you miss the 1%? Well, the reason why you should argue on why they missed the 1% is, in absolute amounts, it translates to 1.5 billion rands. So that's where, in terms of quizzing, it becomes important that 99% is an excellent achievement percentage-wise. But when you look at the absolute amount, it's still quite a lot of money that needs to have been spent given the vulnerabilities and disabilities that we spoke about. Underspending is largely a result of slow spending on foster care, disability and all veterans as a result of lesser than anticipated beneficiaries. Non-payment of NPOs due to various non-compliance issues on the part of NPOs. And in terms of the NPOs, 2 years ago we did a report around NPOs in collaboration with our colleagues in social development, and that report was tabled with Parliament. And a lot of the recommendations that came out of that report, the department took on its stream, and the portfolio committee may just want to see how far some of those recommendations have been addressed, because they also spoke to some of the challenges within the NPO sector on the basis of discussions with them. And at the back of this presentation, we've just highlighted some of the important recommendations emanating from that report. The final reason is slow spending on legal services, as litigation cases reported were lower than in previous years. So it's a good thing that litigation cases come down, but it also results in the amount that you set aside for litigation cases not being spent for a good reason, that you are not having to go to court to deal with a particular issue. So those are some of the main reasons for the underspending for the department that we have picked up. This slide looks at achievement of performance targets. Remember, we spent 99% of the budget. Now, the department achieved 78% of its performance indicators. Here we just base it on their reports and the Auditor General's reports in terms of what was achieved. So they achieved 78% of their performance indicators, yet they spent 99% of their budget, suggesting to us that the budget and performance functions are not well aligned within the department. So that's an issue that we think needs a discussion, clarification, and actions to be put in place in order to align budget and performance functions within the department, because there's that discrepancy of 78% and 99%. Even though the department updated their monitoring and evaluation system, many indicators reported on are still vague, and some do not comply with the SMART principle that the Auditor General looks into. As an example, there is number of households supported and linked to socioeconomic opportunities, and it is unclear the nature of the socioeconomic assistance being provided. And it's unclear, and we're unsure how the department therefore measures whether the target has been achieved or not. And part of the oversight function for the portfolio committee would be precisely how have we service delivered around that target. So if the target, you're not sure on how it's measured, then you can't exercise your oversight on that particular target. So there are a number of those that still need more work to allow you to exercise more stringently your oversight function on targets that have a service delivery connotation that you can exercise your oversight on. Otherwise, the bottom graphs just show you pay program achievement versus not achieved in terms of the targets. But our main point is the discrepancy between the spend and the performance indicators. The big variances between the indicator target and departmental achievement, as we said, suggests a lack of proper criteria for setting targets, including proper costing of the targets. For example, the department refurbished 4 times the amount of social development facilities as indicated in its annual report, yet the budget was not overspent. So that is a discrepancy, right? You've refurbished 4 times more than you pre-planned, but still you did not overspend your budget. Administration, with finances constrained, we think the value add of some activities need to be assessed. For example, marketing and advertising initiatives, public participation events need a thorough assessment and really prioritizing on what is really necessary and core and what can be dispensed with. Again, all in the interest of affecting our vulnerable groups. Again, under administration, even though some posts are being held in abeyance until after the organizational structure review process, we still feel that the turnaround time in filling vacant posts is a matter of concern. And it is standing at 15 months. And we think, although we understand that there is organizational structure review process, spending over, having 1 year, 3 months on average when a post is vacant is too long. And remember, in terms of our context, we're talking about pressing vulnerabilities amongst the groups that we spoke about. And when you spend 15 months without filling those posts, that only increases the backlog in terms of the suffering of our people. Coming to social assistance, budget allocation for social relief of distress grant does not seem to align with the targets. For example, the department processed 3 times more social relief of distress applications compared to its targets, yet underspent by 267 million rands. So again, service delivery is fantastic, but you've still underspent even though you've processed more, 3 times more than you had budgeted for. Coming to social security policy and administration, while new policy proposals being worked on are noteworthy, and the important one here for us is universal child support and proposals for guaranteed employment, and Honorable Chair, we can come and also share our thoughts around these policy proposals, because the Commission has in the past done quite a lot of work around here, and we are in full agreement with the thrust of these particular pieces of policies under development. But we still think the committee should be apprised on the affordability of the proposals and the potential effect it may have on the national fiscus. That's a discussion that should not only involve social development, but also brings in national treasures into services, well, the program was awarded more scholarships than planned in 2015-16. The issue that we think the committee should pick on with this 50% more scholarships is whether these scholarships involve any future budgetary implications, such as the placement of these graduates, and if so, will the Department of Social Development have the financial resources to accommodate the placements? Because, as we know, given the current environment that is taking place, this is something that can easily come back to become a big issue and requiring forward. And it would be amiss on our part not to bring to the committee's attention that these are issues that need discussion now before it becomes a problem. With social policies, some activities being implemented under this program overlap with some activities funded by agriculture, forestry, and fisheries. An example is provision of food and nutrition services, supporting cooperatives. And we think for the committee, it needs to be informed whether on any coordination between social development and DAF is taking place regarding the implementation of these activities. And I can just share that in the context of the Portfolio Committee on Health, there are also overlaps between DAF and Department of Health that we brought to the committee's attention. And the Department of Health has developed an explicit coordination plan involving DAF that they then presented to the committee in terms of how to reduce overlaps and ensure that we don't double dip on a particular issue. The performance of the legislative and policy reform branch under this program is adjudged to be poor, as many indicators have not been achieved. And from our perspective, any new policies or bills proposed should be costed so that financial implications are properly understood. And we think that lies at the root of some of the problems that we're raising here. So to conclude, Chair and Honorable Members, we think within the context of the goals of the National Development Plan, the Department of Social Development has an important role to play in uplifting the lives of vulnerable groups in South Africa. It is well placed and at the center of those activities. Relatively stable real growth in the department's budget is maintained over the period reviewed. The quality of performance information in the annual report does not always allow for effective oversight over the department's performance. And the areas that we think require your close attention is revising the indicators to comply with the SMART principle, and that allows you to do more effective oversight in terms of actual service delivery. Fiscal implications, both present and future, and affordability of performance indicators that relate to policy proposals should be assessed. The value add of some activities are questionable and should be examined. And finally, we think there is a need for improvement in coordination with other departments that implement similar activities. And DAF was a particular case in point in our analysis. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, can we put our hands together? Not really up at the moment. I'll call for hands. But can I just welcome your presentation and say it really hinges around some many issues we've been raising as this portfolio committee. Mm. Indeed. And I think we will need a round table with yourselves not very long from now, because I think we need to work with the department towards addressing what you've really raised. I have now the honor to
acknowledge your hands, honorable members. Okay, I can acknowledge two hands, honorable Bev, honorable Wilson. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable chairperson, and thank you to the presenter for the presentation. Yes, I'd just like to make a few comments and regarding the PWDs, the people with a disability. Absolutely, they need to be integrated into the mainstream. That is not negotiable. For too long, they've been forgotten. And also noting that the 2 years compulsory preschool education of quality to be improved, that I also think is a good recommendation. Then you're right when you say the 99%, especially in my language, would be excellent if I have to achieve that at varsity or anywhere else. I think this instance we're talking about 1.5 billion, and we've got lots of vulnerable groups out there that 1.5 billion could cover. And also a recommendation that the NPOs, the non-compliance, we need our NPOs to comply, so we need to have assistance on the compliance issue, maybe some workshops or things like that. And then the variance between indicator targets and the department's achievement, that also regarding the refurbishment of 4 times, interesting overspend, I don't know, maybe also some remedial needs to be done there because some departments think that underspending is good and it is not good in this department. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I cannot tell you how delighted I am to receive this report and that some of the work on issues that we have been discussing for a very long time now appears to be taken seriously. I would like to raise a couple of comments, though. The first one is the access of antiretrovirals for women 16 years and older. Considering the very huge challenge we have in this country at the moment with teenage pregnancies, and this is children from the ages of 10 to 15, let alone 16 years and older, I think this is a situation that needs to be reassessed. The future generation of children in this country are being jeopardized, but then do not have are not protected by getting the antiretrovirals. I think that is a situation that we need various departments to get together and discuss that issue. Please can you explain the large growth in Programme 4 of 26.23%? That's quite an astronomical growth. And then there's a comment that that SASA is going to look at the replacement for a social pension system. I always question these kind of decisions because is it legal? The constitutional right of these people is to make choices of their own. And my question is, can such a system be enforced? It's all very well to spend a lot of time looking at a new system, but if it is not constitutional and you take away the freedom of the rights of people to choose for themselves, I just want a legal opinion on that. My colleague talked about the 99% of the budget, but the underspending of 1.5 billion, which is alarming when this department supports the vulnerable, the very, very vulnerable. She also discussed the non-payment of NGOs. And with the achievements of performance targets, you know, 78%, but 99% of the budget always concerns me. It makes it appear that the department is putting way too much effort into setting low targets so that at the end of each period they look great because they achieved them. And I'm glad to see that the SMART principles there are being assessed. Two other points, just very briefly. The added value on some activities, i.e. marketing, advertising, public participation at events. This has now become a critical issue as far as we are concerned. When you're spending 16 million on catering, 121 million on travel, and 40 million rand on venues, my hair stands on end when people are starving. Want to know what the outcomes of those events are.
Okay.
And we have, and just finally, Chair,
just
quickly on the scholarships.
Okay, just a minute. My request is that we must differentiate from this brief and what is to be asked to the department, because the analysis helps us to understand how the department is implementing. And therefore, some questions indeed relate to the next meeting, Honourable Member. you will still have a chance, because we are going to ask department, but we were not supposed to take AG as if it's an implementer, as well as the FFC. So without, I would really want you to shape and focus issues of clarity on the issues they have raised. The rest will belong to the department.
Thank you, Chair. I understand that. I'm just saying I'm welcoming the recommendations on the investigation into these things, because they're important, and particularly on the 50% more scholarships given. There are already 2,700 unemployed graduates. Can the FFC, combined with the department, please see if there's not a way where we can use these budgets to employ the currently unemployed before we go and offering more bursaries to people we cannot employ anyway. Thank you.
There are two hands, Honorable Mavilo and the whip. I'm sorry, this thing, yes, makes me to be really, So there are those three hands in that order, Honorable Mavilo, the whip, Honorable Soledi.
No, thanks, Chair. I think, Chair, you have covered me by saying that as a portfolio committee, we are to a greater extent vindicated in terms of, as you said, our interface with the department. Some of the issues that you are highlighting is exactly what we have been articulating. You have given, as the FCC, a seven-year trend of the budget analysis. But when I looked at the recommendation, the last one, I've gone through them, I have not seen you speaking or recommending in terms of your own observations around the trend, in terms of your overall budget analysis and the cash flow. I was inquisitive and very interested in saying these are good observations, but then what is the final approach and so forth. And as the chair clearly indicated, some of the questions that I wanted to pose with the direction given by the chair will then be posed by the department, I mean to the department, especially around the turnaround time on filling vacancies. But overall, Chair, I'm very much appreciative of the analysis given, and it empowers us more in our oversight role. Thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. My questions are reserved for the department. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I do agree with the previous speaker that when you look at what the FFC is, speaking to us about, are things or matters that we normally bring up with the department. Because I can take, for example, the social workers. We're always worried about them because they're not being placed. So, you know, just to give you one example, I won't cite other examples. But I'd like to ask the FFC a question here. When it comes to your social assistance program, when it comes to the old age, the real annual average increase, you know, when it comes over the years, it's 3.4%. And why is there an increase? Because we know, I don't know whether I should use the word or not, that South Africa has a youth bulge. But there's increase. Because to me, there should be a decrease over time, then the increase will come. And I think that is important to us. Then when it comes to the National Development Agency's mandate review, the budget goes up a real average by 6% per annum. And it peaks at 283 million.
and reprioritization will take place. But when it comes to the NDA, I think, you know, when they gave us their real budget in one of our previous meetings when the board came to meet us, they spoke about 292 million. Although it was not that we didn't oversight the 292 million, they just made a proposal that they needed so much money. But, so I'm just interested in that. You're very correct when it comes to overachievement and baseline figures. But that we're going to leave for the committee. But I like what you said. You know, I think we should ask the department, they should keep it in mind in case we forget. How do you measure your targets? I'm almost completed, Chair. What's the 60% and 10%? And I'm not going to speak to the 16% and 10%. We'll ask when it comes to filling of posts back to the department. The FFC who paid for themselves in 2006, but that is for the department. That is for the department. And I'd like to say to the FFC, when it comes to food security, our chairperson is always speaking to the integrated approach with agriculture and with the other departments. But we know that when it comes to our department, you know, they're not supposed to be working in silos. They are doing the integrated approach. But I'm not hearing it this term, not this term, in this annual report, that they're not telling us that when it comes to the integrated approach, their programs are being compromised. They did bring it up before, but they're not bringing it up now, which means things are happening. Thank you.
And let me also welcome the presentation. It's very straightforward. At least we have more and more insight as we are going on proceeding. But I just want to understand whether the commission, do they meet with social development department just to advise them? Because it's my belief that some of the issues that they've identified here that are listed there, if they meet with social development, some of them could have been corrected, like the issue of a smart principle. So it's very important. That's very important. You have to plan your targets, whether they are measurable, are they attainable, and all of those that are contained in the smart principle. So I just want to ask them, because my belief is they are also tasked with the responsibility of oversight like ourselves. They do that as per the Constitution of the Republic, because they are established per Chapter 13 of the whatever, finance, and you name it. I want to understand whether do they meet with various departments, not only social development, okay, we believe in social development, to advise them during the course of the process, whether it's during the process of the annual, the process annually, before they even submit, or even after they've submitted their performance plan for that year, to advise them that this is what you'll be moving towards. This is what is each other on board as we are moving forward, they would have problems.
actually.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members, for the questions. I'll start with the last two strategic questions, and then I'll ask Sasha to take us through the specific program questions that were raised, because she's our specialist budget analyst in the Commission. So, is the department responding positively to Commission recommendations? My assessment, based on the last 10 years, is that yes, indeed, the Department of Social Development positively responds to our recommendation. But there is an issue that requires been dealt with. When the Minister of Finance presents the budget in February, he will also table the response of government to recommendations of the Financial and Fiscal Commission made 10 months prior to the budget and explain what recommendations they've taken into account and what they have not. So, the Minister of Finance makes the response on behalf of government. And it makes the response in terms of Section 214 of the Constitution. So sometimes there are some things that are not directly speaking to the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act. That is, he or she, whoever is the Minister of Finance at that particular point in time, cannot respond to on behalf of government because it falls outside of the IGFR Act. And the way those recommendations are processed has been a lacuna in the past, in that some recommendations that are very useful for the department and the Portfolio Committee on Social Development are not responded to in terms of the IGFR Act. So we haven't had a mechanism for processing those recommendations up until recently, where the thinking is that, in fact, portfolio committees are in a strong place to pick up on those recommendations that have not been responded to, but talk to the specific department they exercise oversight on, to call that department and say, how are you dealing with these recommendations? And those are the ones that, some of them that we say are in the pipeline, we've put in the appendix of this report. So we've just looked at the last 3 years and said, these are some of the recommendations that the Portfolio Committee needs to be aware of that we've put in the stream that the department is busy dealing with. But you don't see in the budget papers in February, because they were not made in the context of the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act that the minister uses when preparing what was formerly Annex E of the budget. So, Honourable Member, that would be my response to your question on whether the department responds positively to our recommendations. It has been that disjuncture, but we as a commission actually believe that follow up on all those recommendations that haven't been processed through the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act. All those, deal with them with the relevant department, because if something doesn't fall under the is not related to the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act, so what? In the big scheme of things, the Portfolio Committee is interested in the vulnerabilities that we spoke about. Mm-hmm. So whether it is directly related or unrelated to a certain piece of legislation isn't really what the Portfolio Committee is interested in. The Portfolio Committee is on oversight for the whole deliverable of the department, irrespective of the legislation.
Before we go to other questions, Umamu Soledi would want to say something in relation to how you have responded, and I will also have the privilege to say something. Thank you.
I just wanted him perhaps just to make an effort with the recommendation, because where I'm sitting, mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think hard, taking in consideration different presentations that we had previously with the social development. Because Chairperson, I'm raising this, I think I'm interested in this Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act. I'm going to read it myself, because sometimes we always, departments always come back and blame treasurer on some of the issues that are not funded or that treasurer refuse to fund. That's why I just want them to make an example. Maybe just an example where social development perhaps has made a recommendation, or there's a recommendation that falls outside the scope of the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act. Thank you, Chair.
I would want to know, because what you have presented here is within the context of what the department is doing, but what you analyzing here is a methodology that seeks to say, while they use what has been budgeted for and what has been given to them, do they take this, for example, you don't need additional law to make, because Auditor General has also commented on these smart, because your targets to be realistic, to be achievable, to be time-bound, you don't need any money for that. In fact, it perfects how you implement. Mm. In fact, all what we have been talking about with the department is what we're talking about, because we make our own analysis of what they presented as their strategic plans, and also what they presented when they are actually their APPs, whatever. But now, when it comes to implementation, we have exactly what you have observed. The question now that arises from Ulsi's woman is that what is it that it can be done, because Treasury can't agree, because those funds are already with us, with the department. Thank you very much. I'm sorry if I'm confusing you.
That is the whole point of engagement, Honorable Chair, and the more questions and probing, the better for our common understanding. Now, if I can take your question together with what she had posed around whether we meet with the various departments. And the best way I can say this is from the prefacing slide about the Financial and Fiscal Commission. We actually report to Parliament. We are a servant of Parliament. We are a tool of Parliament in the main provincial legislatures and any organ of state. So those three categories, Parliament, provincial legislatures, any organ of state, is free to call on us if they want our assistance. We do not implement, so we wait to be called upon for assistance. And that's the constitutional role given to the Commission. we're not implementers, but advisors to those three areas. So with today's recommendations, you called upon us through the letter that you called and said, can you assist us with pointers as we prepare in the BRRR reports? We haven't shared with the department because it was your request in your role as portfolio committee and using the mandate of the commission that you can call on us to say, can you come and brief us on the Department of Social Development. When this took place last year when we were briefing the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlements, it then took a recommendation to say there was an issue around accreditation of housing to metros. That was an issue. It then took a resolution that said before we meet again or call again the commission, we want the department and commission to have met and discussed the accreditation framework, so that when the commission comes, with or without the department, they can report back to us in terms of progress with that accreditation framework. So that can happen with a portfolio committee on social development, that you can even take another requirement from the commission where you say commission must meet with the department to deal with a certain issue. As long as it's within our mandate, we will meet with the department. And yes, we have instances that we have worked with the Department of Social Development. I can point to two flagship projects, one emanating with the recommendation around making more resources available for progressive realization of an ideal child support system, is work that we have been working quite closely with the department, particularly on the modeling side of the issues, where the two institutions collaborated quite closely. The public hearings report, where we wanted to understand issues in the NPO sector and what was a bottleneck to extension of child welfare services using that as a vehicle. We worked very closely with the department. So the relationship isn't broken, but given the nature, we only respond when our services are called upon. And that is important in terms of how the Constitution is written, that in some instances, although we can be proactive if something is extremely not working or dysfunctional, we can be proactive and point to those issues, but in a lot of instances, we are reactive, and when we're called upon, we are always available to the department.
I'm sure there are three questions that you will have to respond to.
Sure.
Thank you.
Let me ask my colleague Sasha now to go into the specific. I think there was the DNA one that spoke about 292 million rands. Then the social assistance one, where there is a youth bulge, yet old age part is going up, which is a very technical, philosophical question. I think, but our budget analyst will give a view around that, and if need be, I'll come at the end with my philosophical thoughts around the generational contestations in terms of which generation ought to prioritize. Yes, yeah. And there are quite a number of other ones that were specific to the budget. Sasha, with your allowance, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. If I can perhaps start off the question around what is driving the bed growth in Program 4. In Program 4, which is the Welfare Services Policy Development and Implementation Support Program, there are about three aspects that seem to be driving the growth in that program. It's two of them are in relation to ECD. It's firstly, the department aims to increase subsidies in respect of ECD services so as to ensure that all children accessing ECD services receive an ECD subsidy. Secondly, it's been noted that increased funding to the second area that's driving the growth is increased funding to ECD facilities in order to upgrade their facilities so that they are able to comply with the norms and standards and can then become fully registered in terms of the Children's Act. And then the third area that seems to be driving the growth relates to spending on reforms and standardization of the social welfare system. And it's the department aims for this for these reforms to be completed by 2017-18. So it seems that those three things are driving expenditure in that program. In terms of the growth in the old age pension, it seems that the basis for the increase in that allocation is the fact that the elderly population of people that are older than 60, there's a 3% per annum growth in that particular category of people. So it seems that that is driving the growth in that particular grant. And then with respect to the NDA amount, we took the figures from the 2016 ENE. So that's an officially published document. That's where we took our figures from. So I'm not sure if the department would be in a better position to detail the discrepancy in the amount. With respect to our analysis and the our budget analysis and the recommendations, when we do our analysis, we believe that there's no sense in just looking at the rand and since you need to look at the value that buys. So our key recommendation stemming from our budget analysis is based on that disjunct between the high level of spending and your relatively lower rate of achievement of your key performance indicators. So if within that context, our main recommendation would then be about improving the efficiency of spending and very importantly that such spending be informed by questions around value add and affordability of the spending plans. I think that was the budgetary.
I can see that this is a very interesting debate. And my colleague wants to ask questions, but I want to inform the meeting that 12 o'clock is long gone, but we have our lunch time at 1. You can eat from that. So from that of our lunch, but can you pose your question?
I think we are not going to finish, Chair. Mm-hmm. I want to agree with you. But the Commission has said to us, we must feel free to call them at any given time. I think we really need a presentation from them, looking at our program with your assistant there at the table, and we call them. Because I'm worried if we'll keep on going and eating lunch. Some of us must have very romantic appointments at lunch. You never know.
Assist us by doing whatever you want, just Honorable
Mark. I'm sitting in another committee and I see some of your officials were there yesterday in the committee where I'm sitting. The department department raised the question that it was for the first time. I'm just following up on Bumbi. It seems it's a pattern or a trend that they were seeing that report for the first time. There was no interface between FFC and the portfolio, the department yesterday. So maybe it's something that we must look into in future. I understand your mandate and everything. One interesting question that I want to ask, Chair, is 1 minute is, I've gone through everything. I know you are not AG, you are not what. You are analyzing the department. But one thing that is, I don't know, is it an omission or not, or it's not your focus area. This department has received an unqualified report and the entities, but nowhere is it mentioned. I know you are not the AG. It's the role of the AG. We've received a briefing from the AG. So for you, it's not material. It's not important. That's just what I want to know. Because you have analyzed the department budget in detail, but there's no reflection on this department has received a qualified report or unqualified or a disclaimer. But in this case, it's unqualified. And there's no reflection on that. Out of interest, it's not fundamental.
They can respond when they come. These two questions, but I also saw their mandate when they were saying if they are looking at the effect of all what has been done, such as the clean audit and reversals, what impact has it had on the intended change of the key indicator which they were actually addressing. But I think I do honor the fact that we must sit with them as soon as possible, because ourselves were meeting for the first time, which means as a portfolio committee, maybe those are the recommendations where we would be saying, now that you sit with us, now that you give us this information, are we able therefore to recommend to you that meet our department on these issues so that our ongoing interaction is giving effect to what it is intended to be. Can I then, with all due respect, comrade, not suppressing your question, because you can't commit with food now. You can't commit with food. Can we then thank you and allow you to go with the hope that we will meet very soon, as much as requesting that we go for the agenda, and then we'll come back and start with the next meeting. Thank you so much. Did I?
Thank you. Thank you.
do believe we can now settle down. Can we try and go back to our seats? Go out? Oh, yes, we had a friend. Where is one of your friends? You can call others too. Thank you. Out of record. I'm sure the departmental members that remained during the past session did enjoy this report, although they were not formally invited by FFC. Didn't you guys? No, not at all. Okay. But I mean, you enjoyed the presentation. But there's not much notes I can see with this regard. But we'll take this and discuss it somewhere in some other time. Okay. Can we then, you are protected from that gentleman. This one, you are protected from that gentleman. Don't ignore. Osborne, I wish to protect you from this gentleman. There will be no questions directed to geographical location of the person. Well, we welcome the department, and I think you understand that our schedule was going to be in the manner it is, but at the same time, we didn't eat anything in your time, and we are dealing with matters that we always deal with. We are very familiar with the information to be presented. So we spend more time on questions, recommendations, whatever. But I also urge members to allow the chair to say, we will not start with your mandate today. We've known your mandate for some time now, your vision, your other things, but then we will just go straight. I'm looking for those who are shaking their heads otherwise, but I will see any. In terms of you, just go straight to the programs, and we'll go on with that. Here we are. I want to re-emphasize this issue, members, honorable members, that we know the vision of the department. We know, but then we will go to apocalypse, to programs, and what has taken place, and we can go on and on. So with that arrangement, I allow the acting DG to actually start leading us forward. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, the minister is on her way. She's landed at 20 past 12, if I'm not mistaken. I think they are driving towards the parliament right now. They'll be joining us a little bit later. But honorable Chair, honorable members, it gives me a great pleasure to both present the financial and non-financial performance of the Department of Social Development for the financial year 2015-2016. Which ended up in 31 March 2015. This presentation is going to cover.
Please bear with me. I've made a mistake. Can I allow first to introduce your delegation, those specific guests that need to be introduced, not all the faces we know. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. With us here, we from the NDA, we've got the board members. I'll request them to introduce themselves so that the honorable members and the chairperson will hear their voices because they may not talk on this annual report of DSD. They may talk on when it comes to their turn. Can I request them to introduce themselves, right from the acting CEO, the side, right up to the board members?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Zolile Ngakani. I'm the Deputy Chair of the NDA Board. Our Chair is here also, but she has just stepped out.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Farzana Baracha. I'm the Chairperson of Audit and Risk for the NDA Board. Thank you.
Same work with them at the departmental level. You are very welcome in this meeting, and I will make that special welcome that you've joined us, and we will always work together so that our work is really effective. Thank you so much for honoring this particular invitation. Thank you. You can go ahead.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. As I was saying, that we are very honored to present the annual report, the 1 March 2016, to the portfolio committee. The report we are presenting is this document, which indeed can say it looks good outside and it looks good inside too. We know the honorable members will appreciate the information that is inside there. The presentation will cover but not limited to the following: the strategic priorities of the department as captured on the MTSF 2014-2019, and we'll talk a bit about the purpose, and I hope Ms. Lumka is not going to get deep into it, because we are going to be talking much more on the presentation, the branches that we are dealing with. We'll deal with the performance summary, the audit opinion on the performance of information, expenditure as per program. It is important to know that, the Chairperson and Honorable Members, that when presenting quarterly reports, the rating of performance was according to three categories, namely green for fully achieved, yellow for or amber for partially achieved, and red for non-achievement. This is because the targets not achieved or partially achieved is in one quarter can always be achieved in the subsequent quarters. However, reporting on annual performance is rated according to two categories, that is green and red. This is so as there is no opportunity to achieve that which has not been achieved and cannot be carried over to the next financial year. Members will notice that the performance trends reflect a 67% performance in achieving the achievement of targets for 2015-2016 financial year, which is similar to the 2014-2015 financial year. This is just a drop, 2% drop from 2013-2014, which stood at 69%. With your permission, Chair, so that we don't waste time, because we see that the program is very long, I would like to hand over to the acting DDG for strategy, Ms. Lumka Oliphant, to give the presentation. Thereafter, we'll request the Chief Financial Officer to add on financial matters, and then entertain questions and comments after that. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and the Portfolio Committee. As the DG has outlined for us, we have five programs in the department, namely administration, namely administration, social assistance, social security policy administration, welfare services, policy development and implementation, social policy and integrated service delivery. We had a total of 174 targets, Chairperson, of which 117 were achieved. About 57 could not be achieved in the past financial year. if we could get to our administration and what we had committed to do in the past financial year. We had committed in administration that we will monitor and report about 100% of our FOSAT social sector cluster, facilitate 4 bilateral agreements, facilitate DSG participation in 6 international bodies, form partnerships with 8 stakeholders in support of DSG and projects. With regards to our monitoring and report and FOSAT, we've done all 10 scheduled cluster meetings and were convened and were reported accordingly. We've done all our bilateral agreements under which are also under negotiations with different countries, namely USA, Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, Benin, Bulgaria, Peru, Chile, Sweden, and Thailand. We've also participated in international bodies, UN, BRICS, SADC, AU, and PPD. We've done partnerships and formed with various local and international organizations to support our programs, such as VEP programs, youth camps, Golden Games, ECD, and Child Protection Week. Under strategy and development business, we had committed to implementing new designs, special norms and standards for the construction of new facilities. 15 new facilities were constructed in line with the new design, special norms and standards for the construction of new facilities. We also said that we will improve about 25 DSD offices, of which 103 offices were constructed and refurbished in the last financial year. We also committed to develop and pilot complaints management system within our national DSD help desk. Yes, indeed, our complaints management system was developed and operational at the Gender-Based Violence Command Center. We said we'll capacitate about 150 officials on gender mainstreaming. We've done about 146. Moving to our M&E and our administration, we committed to updating our social development M&E system. Indeed, the M&E system was updated and aligned to relevant outcomes. We said we'll implement evaluation of the National Drug Master Plan. We evaluated the report and it was compiled. We said we will do a diagnostic evaluation of our regulatory framework and legislation for NPOs. Our evaluation report was produced on regulatory framework and legislation for NPOs. We also committed to our PIMS for our public entities. Indeed, we did develop them. It was tested and it was approved. Still under administration, Chairperson, we have our legal services. We said we would respond to about 90% of our applications for appeals, letters, and demands. Yes, 1,717 of our appeals, letters of demand, and practice directives were received, and the unit responded timeously to about 97.3% of our responses. We said we will communicate 90% of our outcomes letters within 3 days. 100% of these letters were done within 3 days of receipt, thereof to our attorneys. We committed to 90% of contracts to be vetted through the contract management system. All of our contracts, 81 service level agreements were done, 19 memoranda of understandings were vetted through the contract management system. Moving on to our finance and information management technology, we said that we will target for an unqualified report on the annual financial statement with no material misstatements. Yes, the department obtained an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General on its 2014-2015 audited annual financial statements. We said we'll automate our corporate business, our electronic management systems for our leaves, our contracts and e-submissions were successfully implemented. We committed to our IT disaster recovery with due diligence. Yes, our business impact and IT risk management assessment conducted and reports were produced. For administration, Chairperson, we achieved 51% overall of our performance. If we move to social assistance, which is program 2, we had committed that our target would be 3,181,959 for our old age beneficiaries, but we are seeing a slight decline. It was increased. So we have a total of 3,194,087. Also, our war veterans, we said we will have a total of about 223 war veterans to benefit from this social assistance. 245 had got benefited from this. For our child support grant, we committed to 12,042,973, but we've managed to get about 11 million and a little bit more, a slight decline to our child support grant chairperson. Also with our disability grant, we had committed to 1,112,767. There is also a slight decline to what we had committed to. This is due to the fact that in the past 4 years, SASSA has improved the grant assessment process. The improved process has ensured that beneficiaries are more rigorously assessed, which resulted in reduced fraudulent claims. In addition, some disability grants were converted to older persons' grants due to age, while some beneficiaries had passed on. If we move to our social assistance in Program 2, we had committed that we would also get about 142,180 care dependency beneficiaries. We received, we did a total of 131,000 and more chairperson. The uptake of this grant chairperson was lower than projected due to our legislative gaps in definition of children with disabilities. While every effort is made, chairperson, to accurately project the values, the projections for disability-related grants are particularly difficult due to the lack of statistics. Our foster care grant as well, chairperson, had committed to more than 490,000. We had a total of 470,000 and 15 people who benefited from the FC, from the foster care grant. The low uptake for this grant was just mainly due to the lapsing of court orders when children turned 18 years. The grant in aid, we had a total of beneficiaries of 104,232. We committed to that chairperson, but a total of 107,806 people benefited from the grant in aid, which had we have exceeded our target. We said we will process about 160,000 applications for social and disaster relief. We did 366,769 applications that were processed. If we move to our program 3, chairperson, which is social security and policy development, we committed to produce 4 oversight reports on adherence and norms and standards for the social assistance program. Indeed, we did 4 oversight reports on these targets. We said we would adjust the means test for older persons grants. Both social grant increases and means test adjustments were made as was committed. We also said that we will draft a policy on the universalization of the child support grant chairperson. Indeed, a draft policy proposal was developed. Proposals will be completed once a study on tax options is done. Inception and first progress reports on the tax option studies were completed. We committed to complete consultations and costing of the policy proposals on expansion of the child support grants to orphans and vulnerable children. Consultations and costing were completed, and finally the policy was approved by Cabinet. We said we'll develop options for guaranteed employment. Final report with policy options was completed, chairperson. We also said that we'll develop a policy on the inclusion of the informal sector workers. Yes, indeed, a draft policy was completed, chairperson and members of the portfolio committee. Moving on to still on program three, to our appeals, adjudication, and the Inspectorate for Social Security, we committed to adjudicating 65% of our appeals. A total of 2,759 appeals were adjudicated, which means that 82.5% of these were done and were done in 90 days of receipt. Improved collaboration with SASSA and access to SASSA's electronic internal reconsideration mechanism management system contributed to us reaching this target. We also said that 100% of our appeals that we received from SASSA will be completed and adjudicated within 90 days. Yes, Chairperson, we did 100% of this within the stipulated time. We also committed to implementing our integrated appeals business information system. Yes, indeed, this was implemented in the last financial year. We said that we'll incubate the inspectorate within the comprehensive social security as a transition agreement. Inspectorate has been incubated, Chairperson, within the branch comprehensive social security by developing strategic draft frameworks covering investigations, financial and compliance audits, and comprehensive stakeholder analysis. Our senior management and support staff were filled during the period under review. If we move to welfare services, Chairperson, we said we'll review the implementation on the white paper. Yes, the review of the white paper was completed, and consultations were done with the social development sector, and it was carried. So, and this was also given to our MINMEC and presented to MINMEC. We said we'd conduct geographic distribution on social welfare workforce. Yes, this we did, a desktop review, Chairperson. We said we'll develop a social work supervision program. Yes, it was developed, Chairperson, and this target was achieved. We said we'd develop the draft recruitment and retention strategy for social service practitioners. A draft recruitment and retention strategy for social service practitioners was developed. Still on welfare services, we said we'll award about 1,300 new scholarships. We have done about 1,860 and awarded scholarships to those who want to be in the profession at Chairperson. We said as well we will facilitate our implementation for the active aging program for older persons. Yes, the program was implemented successfully by all provinces, and the national program was held from the 25th to the 30th of October in Kimberley, in the Northern Cape. We said we'd conduct training on the implementation of the electronic elder abuse register in the 9 provinces. All 9 provinces were trained in this electronic elder abuse register. Still on welfare, when it comes to ECD, our ECD policy was approved by Cabinet. We said we'll also develop a DSD HR plan for ECD. The DSD HR plan for ECD was developed in the past year, Chairperson. We said we wanted to increase the number of children that are accessing ECD programs by 10%. We have exceeded this target, Chairperson, and more children are receiving access to early childhood development. We said we'll approve the comprehensive ECD program. A national comprehensive ECD program was aligned and approved with the ECD policy, which was approved by Cabinet in December last year. We said we'll capacitate, we'll do capacity building on the rollout on the universal access plan in all provinces. Capacity building on the universal access rollout plan in provinces was conducted, and it was completed. Still on our children and welfare services, we had committed to 30,000 persons working with children screened against the Child Protection Register, our Part B Chairperson, 94,552 persons were screened against our CPR, which is Part B, Chairperson. We said we'll also monitor the implementation of ECBND model in provinces. The implementation of our ECBND model in provinces was monitored, and monitoring reports are available. We said we'll do 3 child protection awareness and participation sessions. We indeed had our Child Protection Week, which was launched in KZN, and the closing ceremony was done in Gauteng. We also had an evaluation report on this, and it was compiled. We also participated in the Day of the African Child in partnership with the African Union in June last year. The National Children's Parliament also continued to chairperson. And also we did our National Day celebrations in December in Hlaisan in Mpumalanga. Still on children and welfare, we said we will have about 8 national advocacy and capacity development workshops on children's rights. A total of 10 of these happened in Mpumalanga, Western Cape, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo. We committed to auditing the current foster care placement. Yes, indeed, this was done, Chairperson, and was completed in 9 provinces. We also committed to implementing the transformation plan in our provinces. Yes, the strategies for child and youth care workers was monitored in all provinces, and an annual monitoring report was compiled. We also committed to 9 provincial workshops on child rights governance and compliance. This was achieved, Chairperson. Program 4, when it comes to social crime prevention and victim empowerment, we had committed to accrediting service providers for this program. And we did so, Chairperson, for about 53 service providers in different provinces were accredited. We said we'll review the policy framework on accreditation. A draft review document was developed in consultation with all provinces between October 2015 and March 2016. We also committed to facilitate the implementation of prevention and early intervention programs in 9 provinces. All provincial departments of social development implemented the Integrated Social Crime Prevention Strategy Action Plan. We also said we'll increase the number of people who are accessing the command center by 10%. The gender-based violence command center attended to 51,440 calls and serviced about 8,929 cases in the last financial year, Chairperson. We said we'll train 9 provinces on the policy framework. All the 9 provinces were trained on the trafficking persons policy framework, and a consolidated report was compiled. We said access to data on VEP services in 30 VEP sites. A total of 88 sites were connected and collected data on the VEP system. We said we'll develop a capacity building program for teenage parents. A draft capacity building program for teenage parents was developed and consulted in 5 provinces, Chairperson. If we can move as well, still on social crime prevention, we said we'll have a holiday program strategy for families. A strategy was developed and also in 6 and was consulted in 6 provinces. We committed to a strategy to support families facing the imminent risk of removal of a family member. A strategy was developed and consulted in 4 provinces, in KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, and the Western Cape. Still on welfare services, we said that 8,000 youth will participate in mobilization of our programs. We far exceeded this target, Chairperson. We did about 131,900 youth nationally. We said that we'll have 1,400 youth attending our leadership camp, 1,798 youth attended our youth camps. We committed to establishing 52 youth clubs. We've also far exceeded this target with 1,000 and 67 youth structures was established. We also said that we'll have 70,000 youth participating in skills development programs, 32,806 youth participated in our skills programs, Chairperson. Moving to HIV and AIDS, we committed to training 500 implementers on social behavior change. 517 were done, Chairperson. We said we'll also train 300 facilitators on our CCE. 352 facilitators were trained on our CCE. We said we'll train 1,900 community caregivers on our psychosocial services programs. 3,821 community caregivers were trained. We also committed to training 400 community-based organizations. 600 CBOs were trained on the utilization of the community-based information systems. We said also we'd have 120 officials trained on the same. 230 officials were trained on the data quality management. Moving to disability, we committed to having a national disability rights policy and implementation tools. Cabinet approved the white paper on the rights of persons with disabilities in December last year. We said we'll also finalize the Disability Inequality Index. Indeed, this was also developed in partnership with STEF SA. We wish to highlight that 65% of the entire program of welfare services was achieved, Chairperson. Moving to our last program, which is social policy and integrated service delivery. We committed to developing and review one social policy in collaboration with our relevant directorates. Two policies were produced, the policy on the special housing needs and the draft policy for framework on the integration of refugees into local communities. We said we'll develop and disseminate four policy briefs. Four research and policy briefs are developed. The views of National Treasury on social grants and their impact entering the national minimum wage debate, the minimum wage as a social development issue and a women's issue, the social sector's contribution to radical socio-economic transformation, and also to the NHI, key consideration for social development. We said we'd create 2,271 full-time equivalent FETs, Chairperson, through incentive grants. We have done 3,379 of this. We said also we'll facilitate the provision of integrated DSD services to 42 community works program sites. We did 43 sites, Chairperson. We also, coming to our population policy and promotion, we said that we'll conduct 40 adolescent sexual reproductive health and rights campaign dialogues. We did 82 local community at community level. Our campaign called Ezabasha were conducted in the Eastern Cape, Limpopo, Northwest, Western Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, and Gauteng. We said we'll maintain 26 bursaries for undergraduate studies. Yes, indeed, 26 of these bursary holders were registered at different institutions for population and development. We said we'll also award 5 international scholarships. Yes, 5 of these were done, and participants from Vietnam, Kenya, Ghana, Tunisia, and Pakistan were awarded. We said we'll also monitor our 4th UNFPA country program as coordinated through the NSC, through the National Coordination Forum. We conducted and monitored the implementation of the 4th UNFPA country program of support to the government of South Africa in 8 priority districts in the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, June, November 2015, and March 2016. Moving to our registration and monitoring of non-profit organizations, we said we'd process 98% of these applications within 2 months of receipt, Chairperson. We have done 98.5, and they were processed within the stipulated time. We said 90% of the NPO reports processed will be done within 2 months. 30,681 reports were received and processed, of which 97% of them were processed within the committed time. We said we'd conduct NPO national roadshows in 70 local municipalities. 107 NPO roadshows were held across the country in 93 local municipalities. We committed to training 3,000 NPOs on governance and compliance with the NPO Act. 3,565 NPOs were trained as committed. We said we'll also train about 400 provincial officials in governance and compliance with the NPO Act. 509 provincial officials were trained. Moving to our community development within social policy, we committed to training 1,200 community development practitioners. 1,342 CDPs were trained, Chairperson. We said we'd approve the community development practice policy. This was developed and it was approved, Chairperson. We committed to profiling 100,000 households. 258,947 households were profiled. We said we also profiled 400 communities. 1,907 communities were profiled. We said we conduct 400 dialogues. 493 dialogues were conducted. Through Migonzo, we said we would reach 256 wards. We have reached 1,731 wards through Migonzo, Chairperson. We said we will reach about 60,000 people through our ministerial outreach programs. We are proud to say that we have reached 322,025 people. This is face-to-face, Chairperson. We said we'll develop 400 community-based plans. We have done 1,042 base plans and were developed. We also committed within our community development branch that we will do 300 cooperatives. We'll support 300 cooperatives. In the past financial year, we have supported 160 cooperatives. 860 cooperatives, sorry, Chairperson. We said we'll support 720 community-based organizations. 1,277 CBOs were trained. We said 400 households will be supported and linked to social economic opportunities. We've done more than 1,000 households, Chairperson, and they were supported and linked to social economic opportunities. We said we'll support 9 food distribution centers, Chairperson. We have done so in the past financial year. We said also we'll support 100 community nutrition and distribution centers. So far we have done 167 CNDCs. We also committed that we will do 40,000 households. We'll make sure that 40,000 households have access to food through our DSD programs. 272,217 households access food through our DSD programs. Chairperson, this branch had achieved 86% of the targets that they committed to. Maybe if we can just have a summary, maybe UDG had touched on it when he spoke. But just in conclusion, the trends in our performance during this reporting period remained the same as the previous reporting period. 67% of the set targets were achieved in 2015-2016. Similarly, 33% of the set targets were not achieved during 2015-2016, as it was the case in 2014-2015 financial year. We want to say, Chairperson, that in the year 2012-13, 2013-2014, 2014-2015, and 2015-2016, the Auditor General has evaluated the reported performance against the overall criteria usefulness and reliability. The usefulness of the reported performance information relates to whether it is presented in accordance with the National Treasury's annual reporting principles and whether the reported performance is consistent with the planned objective. Reliability of the reported performance information is assessed to determine whether it was valid, accurate, and complete. We stand here, Chairperson, to say to you that for four financial years, no material findings were raised on the usefulness and reliability of the reported performance information by the department. For 4 years, Chairperson. Through all these years, DSD was amongst less than seven national departments to receive such a rare audit outcome. I will leave to my colleague to give us the finances of the department.
When you repeat the issue of the clean audit, you want me to do that? Let us welcome our Minister Mamubata. Thank you for coming. We had received your visit, so we thought you would find us having not asked questions so far. So your usefulness here is still expected, because we're still receiving presentations. You then, CEO, can continue.
Thanks, Chairperson. With regards to the actual audit expenditure, we spent 98.9% of our budget, which was 137.8 billion. We spent 136.4 billion. In terms of the expenditure per program, we spent in our administration program 100% of the allocated budget. 98.86% of our social assistance budget, with a deviation of 1.4 billion. 99% for social security policy, and also for social policy and integrated service delivery, we spend 99.9%. In welfare services, an underspend of 1.8 million. So the total underspend, 1.4 billion. In terms of the economic classification, in compensation we spend 100% of our budget, and in goods and services we spend 99.73% of the budget. In terms of the transfers and subsidies, the major underspend comes in the households. The 1.4 billion is mentioned in the previous slide, and then also in the non-profit organizations, 1.8 underspend there. And capital assets, we spend 100% of the budget. The major underspending area in the transfers and subsidies, it's in terms of the grants, foster disability in war veterans, where there was less anticipated in terms of the projected beneficiaries. In terms of our spending per program, administration, as mentioned, 100% of the budget. And that indicates also in terms of the economic classification. Social assistance, 98.8%. And we can see the major underspend areas in terms of the war veterans, 92%, 96% in the foster care, 96% in the care dependency. And then social repo space at 60%. In terms of program 3, 99.9%. Major underspending area, 977,000 under the appeals adjudication. And that is in terms of economic classification under the goods and services area. And that's more the legal services, the litigation fees that we've budgeted for. In welfare services, we spend 99.7%. The major underspend area is in terms of 1.8 million in the service standards area, the substance abuse and the older persons programs. And that's mainly in terms of economic classification, that's in the transfers to NPOs and foreign and international organizations. That underpins mainly the Council for Social Professional Services. In terms of Program 5, 99.9% spending. And in terms of the underspent areas in the social policy research, 133,000 for 2,000 underpopulation policy promotion. And that's mainly related to transfers to foreign government international organizations. Thanks, Jefferson.
Thank you so much. The department has presented and there is an opportunity for us as members to now interact with the presentations. But when you lift your hands, you will alert me whether which program you want to go to or suggest whether we go program by program or in. You also make that suggestion. Mrs. Mongis, Mama Abrams, in that arrangement.
Thank you. Let me welcome the presentation that has just been made. But then I've never said, I just want to quote what the presenter, when she was picking her words. She's saying, especially on program 4, because that's where they're over. There's an overachievement in program 4. She is saying, we are proud to say we have overachieved. We have far exceeded the targets. Really, where I'm sitting, how do you become proud of an overachievement? Because the overachievement, obviously, you cannot overachieve and there are no financial implications. Once you overachieved on what you have planned, they're going to leave financial implications. And how do you become proud of it? I was just a little bit disturbed how the presenter was presenting that we are proud to say this, we have far exceeded the target. That Chairperson is not admissible. We cannot be proud of an over achievement. You are proud when you have achieved the target that you planned for. Chairperson, my first question is on, I just wanted to note you to make that comment. My first question is on the issue of the targets that were set for the financial year that is in question. I think if I remember very well, they've achieved, I'm speaking under pressure, they've achieved 67% of the.
Please, honorable members, don't pressurize yourself too much. I will indicate when we are short of time. But for now, because we'll break for lunch and then continue. Mm-hmm. So please.
We can even go at 9 o'clock, Chairperson. Because this is very important. Mm-hmm. And we only do it once a year. Chairperson, they said they've achieved their planned targets. 67 or 65%, I'm speaking under correction, I've just tried to look for that page.
Yes.
But then the spending is sitting at 99 or 98.9%, but the spending is sitting there. The question that I'm having, how come do they achieve 99% in terms of the budget, while their planned target, they've only achieved 67%. Because what I have in my mind, it's like they've used the money on something that they have not planned. That's what the report is saying to a layman like myself. if you have spent that much, you should at least, your targets also should be around your spending. You spend based on your targets, you don't spend based on something that you did not plan. Which therefore, to me, is a very bad planning. In other words, I will assume that the budget that was appropriated was used for something else. It was not used for the targets that were in the annual performance plan. The second one, Chairperson, we had an opportunity of having presentations from both the AG and the finance, you name the ways. I think in the one of the finance fiscal something commission, they've identified that the department has not followed the very important principle, the SMART principle. And when you look also at the planning, it shows clearly, Chairperson, that once you achieve your targets in the level where they've achieved, it really, and the budget vis-a-vis what I've just said, it clearly shows, Chairperson, that whatever that they are saying they've achieved, to me, I would say they aren't measurable. They are not realistic. Can they just explain, Chairperson, how did they get there? They are planning, because we got that, and it was the finance whatever commission has said that the department has not followed the SMART principle. Can they explain to us why didn't they follow that?
That notion comes on two occasions. AG did make that mention in their record, as much as the FFC, they have indicated that. So when you make your responses, you will touch on that. So can I then move to the next question, member, or are you still on
our council?
Okay, sure. Mama, can you be on the floor?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and nice to have you here, Minister. Thank you. Yes, my previous colleague has touched on quite a few things that I also second with. On page 14, it's clearly stated there the irregular and unauthorized expenditure is due to the non-compliance of the PFMA. And you rightfully, Chairperson, that we've had the privilege of having the FFC here in the AG, so most of our questions is also related to what has been presented to us, but in relating to the AR. I'm making a few comments and saying that the department needs to strengthen the internal controls because and find also creative ways of having a zero tolerance environment so that they could have a better understanding of the financial regulations. The department needs to definitely make sure that it's 100% followed. My colleague has mentioned the planning. The department also needs to assist the NPOs because the NPOs is very critical in our communities. They assist us with what we want to achieve regarding the vulnerable groups and so on. So there shouldn't be any underspending when it comes to them. I would like to recommend that perhaps we need to have a program where we can assist them with the compliance. Then also a mention was made regarding the variances between the indicator targets. Four times the department refurbished the DSD facilities, and again there wasn't overspend. So it's just a case of the underspending and overspending. What I'd like to ask the department is what remedial action was taken in regard to the consequence performance management when all these irregularities took place. Is there still cases pending, and is there still cases where people have been dismissed with the irregular expenditure? Then previously the department has mentioned, actually we have asked many a times as a portfolio committee, the overachievement versus the underachievement, and rightfully like my colleague said, the department say when they've overachieved, they've spent the same amount of money, but now we can see it's a reflection that 1% as allotted adds up to 1.5 billion, where the department has spent 99%. So 1% and 0.5% becomes actually a reality at the end. Thank you.
Honorable Mashongi.
Thank you, Chair. Umbuzo, Papa Program 1. What target is the kind of quality that they are achieved? In Gaba, Ms. Obenzantoni Kenbaz, Ms. Abbey Department, Gobani Kenya Kenbi, Flowers, and Sabina Boland, but what I know and understand.
I would proceed and allow a department to respond. But before you allow your team to do that, I'm not actually asking a question in this one, but I am drawing your attention as the accounting officer to say, are you satisfied with these recommendations, steps to be taken to address that would be on your page 14 and 15, which addresses the serious issue of environment as well as exactly in your report to say, steps to be taken. You say you will engage the officials in the affected directorates. They have committed what you see on the environment page 14 as much as other issues that you might have read when you receive your management letter from Auditor General. But you say you will engage them. It is my take that all officials here were not voted like me. Now I don't have any CV to submit. All these hands say, Makapa must come in, I wish. But with yourselves, you sit and get interviewed, and you actually demonstrate your ability to do that as much as the skills you have. But there goes Unjinji saying, we'll engage with these officials. Maybe I don't interpret engage properly. Review the finance policies. If we review the finance policies, have we identified gaps? Or did the officials sleep on duty? Because we can't continue changing our policies while we are not sure whether it's the policy that is not implementable or somebody didn't comply. All these matters and circulars that have been taken, but there's no way where you say where actually nanifuna ba bed babe nento abayenziweyo baxelele nabanye, if you don't comply, this is what will happen to you. Because this non-compliance is actually a very serious, it's a misconduct, by the way. So I would want you to give us hope by saying to us,
indeed, because we want to declare in this portfolio committee that this parliament is not going to take place in future. People will plan properly. People will set their targets as they have planned and according to their strategy, that it will be known and known. So that we don't have a situation where you can take money from compensation of employees or somewhere and take it to that program number one, program one. So can Jinji help us on that one? In fact, you can even take the other ones and refer what you want to refer to your other officials.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Yes, indeed, I'll start with the last one. On our reporting during the quarterly reports, this issue of violence has been very topical, and we did say something around the future of how we're going to be fixing it. I think the CFO did try to mention that the way that, because especially on the program that the social security policy making, there were things that have been budgeted for on the other side, like the issues of the in SASA review mechanism, which we have somehow now changed the policy and moving that issue of 90 days must be cut off, that SASA cannot be a player and a referee on at the same time. It needs to be pulled out of them, that it must come back to the social security. Because that is being done now, you find that the amount that has been done for legal, because we've been challenged too much on legal issues, and there's a money that has been budgeted for. And the unfortunate thing is that we are not doing the legal part of it. It's done by the Department of Justice. So Department of Justice, we have got to budget for it, because towards the end of the year, they'll come with a bill of 17 million or 20 million. It has been happening before because of that policy that we had on SARS. Since we are closing that and we have changed the policy, and that money becomes like a savings. And we did try and explain why we moved from from budget to the budget that we move on the other budgets on I think it's program one, because there we ran short of money on this thing. And the issue of the environments, I'm not too sure whether I would like to go deeper into it, because it raises emotions all the time when you try to explain that that section 43 of the PFMA chairperson allows us to do some of these things, and when we say that we get I'm not sure how to put it, that we're told not to go into the space, but the PFMA in reality does allow us to move money from the other side. It's not that we did not know that we did not plan properly. We did plan properly, as I'm saying, that we planned for legal issues. But since it did not come through as the way that we thought it was, because over the years we have been receiving that, then we had that money. Since we're running short of money on the other program, then we shifted the money onto that program. And the CFO did correctly say that from effective next year, which is this year, we are now properly doing away with that issue of the social security, reducing that and increasing where we need to increase on the other programs where we're supposed to. I think the CFO can explain it better than myself onto this issue. I think I'd like him to add.
Okay.
Onto
let me help you so that you read that 14 properly before you address us on this. How do I do that? I allow us to go for lunch so that you can praise over it, and then you will be given a second chance to address us on this environment. Because I can't agree with you, DG, to say it allows you. It means you work towards knowing that you are being allowed. It's not accidentally happening. And we can't agree as politicians. We can't. Because we expect you to write things. But that provision is made when instances beyond the control of what is happening to take place. So with that note, please read it, because it will go back to the same emotions if it is go like that way. Thank you very much. Can I request us that we adjourn and we have lunch? Okay, sure.
Northern Kingdom.